This time I have a wonderful lecture for you. I've prepared diligently. I think it will really help you a lot. I will speak about a house which we all should build in our life, the Dharma house. You will be very happy. It will be very instructive and very, very helpful for your spiritual lives. So let us just enter this, sing Jai Radha Madhava, and then we do the Samhara Krishna Kirtan. Oh yeah, yeah, we have almost forgotten. Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Gopi dana vallava girivara dadi
Gopi dana vallava girivara dadi
Gopi dana vallava Girivara dadi
Gopijana vallabha Girivara dadi
Yasoda nandana Raja janadandana Yasoda nandana vraja janadandana Yamuna tiravana chari Yamuna tira vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari 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 Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna
Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Thank you.
Everybody, please.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Everybody,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. One more time, please, everybody. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Rama Rama.
One more time, please, everybody.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
good idea. Yeah. I don't know, then we have short breath. Ramananda Sukha.
I think we all felt inspired by our dancer who has disappeared at the moment. I'm just saying, when you started to dance so nicely, you inspired the whole room. It sometimes takes only a little match to light a whole pile of straw, no? Just one little match. So in the same way, it takes one inspired person to really give us that inspiration we are looking for. My dear devotees, dear friends, I'm very happy to address you today on a subject matter which I was talking the last time when I visited London. We had just made a Vastu ceremony where we had inaugurated a real large house which two devotees have built in order to host large meetings in their homes. It was not really only a home for their own use, it was a home built for sanghas, or for the purpose of associating amongst devotees. And it came out very big, the house, and to make sure that everything would be auspicious, we inaugurated the house with a yagya, a fire sacrifice, where we invoked the presence of the Lord who covered the four directions, east, south, west and north, with his auspicious presence. Vastu Homa, it's called. It's something I would recommend to all of you when you move into a new living space. It doesn't have to be a palatial building, it can be a simple straw hut or anything, any space, an apartment. If you make such a ceremony, you invoke the Lord's presence who's there with you in the house. I'm at the moment staying in a house which is, as far as the Vastu, that is the alignment with the universe and with the Lord in the universe. As far as this is concerned, this house is built very nice and it's a very auspicious, light atmosphere, and the sleep is really deep but not so long. You are satisfied with a few good hours and then wake up refreshed and energized, and yeah, you have good dreams and so on. When I was addressing my listeners in London, there were many who looked at the house and they were calculating, oh, this house is bigger than the house of the Patels. you know, and in this way they were... you could see it in the faces. But I told them that when you build a house, now any, every one of us should build a house, but I'm thinking of another house than the house of bricks and stones and wood and steel. I'm speaking of a Dharma house. That is, Dharma defines your purpose, your unique reason for being here. Your raison d'existence, the French people would say, the reason for being, your great why in this life, which when you find it, inspires you and mystically connects you with forces way beyond your own abilities and your own talents. Someone who has found his Dharma is protected and carried by his Dharma. It's almost like, you know, when you find your Dharma, you are like a bulb which was not yet connected earlier with the electricity, but once it is connected and screwed in then the bulb, which used to be lightless and cold, is all of a sudden full of light and full of warmth. All of us, when we are finding our Dharma, we are like that light bulb. We are connected with a force much more higher than us, a universal force which will make all our activities, they will be empowered. And even if something should go wrong, as things do in this world, the wrong is also there for the purpose of teaching you and bringing you on and letting you grow. Dharma, in other words, is something which is inherent. It means it's there in you, and you need to discover it in order to live a fully connected life. There's a very old verse which I would like to chant for you. Donani bhumo pashavo hi goshte, etc. At the time of death, the wealth a person has collected stays in his safe. At that time, when he goes, the cows and goats that were his own remain in their dwelling places. His wife accompanies him only up to the doorway. Friends and relatives come with him only up to the funeral ground. His body accompanies the person who has died only up to the funeral pyre. The only thing that assists him beyond that is his Dharma. Everything goes, the Dharma stays. Ramananda Sakha and myself have prepared for you a very interesting image which shows the nature. We have prepared two images, not this one, Ramananda Sakha, the second with the hand. Here. Can you see it?
Yes.
The hand shows your life, is you, and the ashes which are blown away by the wind are your achievements, your wealth. If you are a farmer in old times, your cows and goats, your house, even your relatives like your wife, everything will go. The only thing which stays with you, stays on your hand, is your Dharma. That accompanies you beyond the flames that devour your body at the time of your funeral. What is Dharma, if we want to be a little bit more precise, a little bit more clear, and maybe able to find our own Dharma? Well, Dharma has three aspects. Just like a house, it has a fundament, it has protective walls that guard you from wild animals, insects, and wild unwanted people. And it also has a roof that is showing upwards. In the same way, as a house has three dimensions, your Dharma house has a fundament, a protective wall, and something that brings it in connection with the Supreme Lord, the ultimate beloved of our life. The fundament of your Dharma house, which I encourage you to look on and maybe build, is what is called in Sanskrit your Svadharma. Sva means own. In American slang you would say your thing. It's your talent, your unique place in life. Platon, the philosopher, has said, there's one place which is still waiting for you. All other places are already occupied. And that place is your own place, your own purpose. Then he ends with the question, why live the way of someone else? Think about it. There's one way, one path in life, which can only be walked by you, not by your neighbor, not by your friend, not by your father or mother. It's a path which is meant for you. As soon as you discover even the initial steps on this path, walk it with abundance, and don't ask, where will it lead me? It's your path. It will lead you to your place. It is a very, very good. Svadharma, your own purpose, that reason why you still had to come back into this life, why you did not attain liberation from the cycle of birth and death. Something you have to learn also while you execute it, while you do it. Something that will strengthen the better side in you and will bring you to the ideal version of yourself. That is the Svadharma, the fundament on which everything rests while we stay here in the world. The very fundament of your Dharma house, your invisible house that you can take everywhere where you're walking. Imagine a house which accompanies you everywhere where you're walking without being a camper that has a Californian number shield on it. An invisible Dharma house. So there are protective walls also of this Dharma house, and there is a specific Sanskrit word for these. It is very complicated, so I like to make it simple and reduce it to the essence. It's how you act ethically. That is, you have to, when you act towards others in a moral way, not cheating them, speaking the truth, being loyal to yourself, not committing violence towards others, either in thoughts or in actions, then you have Dharma on your side. That is, you're protected. You're protected from the hurt of which others might inflict on you. When you act ethically correct, the universe pays you back in the same coins which you have thrown into the universe, or the same actions which you have put outside. They echo right back to you. I would like to give you an example of dharmical activities. It's Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira, the elder brother of the five Pandava brothers, was known for never speaking a lie in his life. Yudhishthira would always think of the welfare of others. When there was this terrible time in the life, in his life, in the life of his brothers, where they were meanly, I should say, exiled to live 12 years in banishment in the forest. You know what was Yudhishthira's main concern? He thought, I would always, when I was a king, be able to take care of those who were dependent on me, the brahmanas, the women, the children. But now I'm banished to go into the forest, and I can only take with me my own breath. Everything else, including my cloth, are taken from me. I'm so sorry, and I regret so much that I won't be able to take care of the brahmanas. He used to feed 10,000 people a day. Imagine you cook, and you, before you eat, you serve out 10,000 meals to the homeless of California. Maybe not much will be left on your plate. But Yudhishthira lived like this. He was always following the laws of Dharma, the ethical codexes. Even when things looked very bleak for him and he needed to only speak one lie to save himself, he wouldn't do it. He kept on following Dharma. He was not like a modern president of a country who may not always be very much known for speaking the truth. He was the exact opposite. And as I said, even when things looked bleak for him, and dull and gloomy, he would not give in. And the result was very, very amazing. In the ultimate confrontation between Duryodhana, the personification of adharma, of meaning following no dharma, Duryodhana had a huge army. Yudhishthira had 5 contingents less, of army soldiers. When it came to this unavoidable confrontation, Yudhishthira still won, because someone who protects Dharma is protected by Dharma. This acting ethically, acting morally, according to codex, is like a safe wall around your life that will protect you ultimately from the violence which you find in this world, the hurt which you find in this world, the misunderstanding, etc. And finally, the roof of your Dharma house, the Sandama, Sanatan Dharma, is what you do in relationship to up above, to Krishna. We are reminded of a very nice instruction, spiritual instruction. You all must have heard about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the divine avatar and also the founder of the Hare Krishna movement. He lived the life of a possessionless mendicant and did a tour through South India, which is well documented by his biographer, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. What would he do? He would walk. He had only one assistant with him who carried his water pot. Sannyasis would always go with a not modern thermos. They had a simple water pot with them, and this was carried sometimes by the assistants. So they would go, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while he went, would sing this song, Krishna, 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 hey,
Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Pahi Mam.
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Pahi. Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshama. Krishna Kesava, Krishna Kesava, Krishna Kesava, Pahima. Complexion body. His eyes looked like ponds because there were constantly tears falling out of them. They were very long, his eyes. They extended to his ears, and therefore it was said he had lotus eyes. They looked like the petals, the long drawn out petals of a lotus flower. And as he was walking, he was singing the names of Krishna, which we sing at the present moment. But at times, he would all of a sudden become overwhelmed with ecstasy, and he would sing very, very, very dynamic. Krishna, 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 Pahima. Krishna, 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 Pahima. Krishna, Kesava, Krishna, Kesava, Krishna Kesava Pahima. Rama Raghava Rama
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.
So he would eventually arrive at a village. If it had a temple, he would visit the temple and fall into fits of ecstasy. He used to dance before the deity. It would never stop. People had never seen this. As he was dancing, tears of love were sprinkled from his eyes, and they came on the garments of the people. They were electrified by this divine tears. So sometimes he would walk and there would be no temple or no village, no human settlement to spend the night. He would simply sit under a tree and eventually fall asleep chanting the holy names. Only to wake up early in the morning, take a shower in the nearby river or pond or any body of water, and then continue his ecstatic South India tour. So once he came to the town of Kurmakshetra, and he visited the temple of Lord Kurma, did his usual program of chanting and dancing, and one brahmana watched him. This brahmana understood, this is not an ordinary person. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had somewhat calmed down, he said, "Please visit my house for your meals." Enter Chaitanya consented. The brahmana sent a quick note through one of the village children who ran through the village, and the child said to the wife of the brahmana, "Your pati, your husband, has invited the best of saints. Cook a variety of preparations, as much as you can muster at this time." So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would eventually arrive, and as he was stepping into the house of the brahmana, this brahmana said something so beautiful. He said, "These feet, which are worshipped by Brahma, the creator of the universe, and by Lord Shiva, who carries the water which comes from these feet on his head and has therefore become auspicious." No? Shiva carries what water? Ganga. Yes, Ganga. That comes from the feet of the Lord. "These very feet which have blessed Brahma and Shiva are now stepping into our house. There is no word, there are no words in my possession that are enough to express our good fortune." When Lord Chaitanya was seated, he agreed to a foot washing ceremony. The members of the house came and bathed his lotus feet. This is what is traditionally done when a saint visits the house. They would walk barefoot, the dust and the street would be attached to these feet. So they were washed. Then the brahmana lovingly sprinkled the water all over the heads of the people. I remember we once did this in Germany when we received our spiritual master at the airport. We brought him in the VIP lounge and we gave him a public foot washing ceremony. It was all over the German TV. This was an unusual event for the Germans. And then we took the water and sprinkled it over the journalist who tried to run away. But they were not fast enough. It became really nationwide news, the water which had bathed the feet of a saint. Not in a bad way, they were just very, it was just very un-German. So this was done there in the house of the Brahmin. And then the Brahmin said, it came time for discussion. The Brahmin asked Chaitanya, "I'm tired of this miserable material life. I'm a bound soul, totally slaving away in earning for a livelihood. Please allow me to go with you, take me with you." So all this, what you have heard so far, had been extremely congenial, is that the English word? Very pleasant, and so on, big smiles, everything. But when the Brahmana uttered his request, "Take me with you," Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very stern in his expression. And he said, "Never speak like this again. Your dharma is here, your swadharma, to take care of your family. But you should, while you do this," he didn't say build your roof, he said, "you must do something for eternity. Your sanatan dharma, that what we refer to as the roof in the dharma house." And he gave him three instructions. Would you like to hear these three instructions?
Yes.
I think if you contemplate about these instructions and apply them in your own life, your dharma house is complete. It has a roof. Mm-hmm. Applying in one's own life. He said, first of all, read in the sacred scriptures to increase your spiritual knowledge. And he mentioned especially the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then the second instruction is, chant the holy name. The Brahmana said, wow. And then he said, don't close the door of your house to others. Open your door wide for others. And invite them for spiritual programs where you discuss this content of the sacred scriptures and the divine life-giving instructions. Invite others. Then you should hold kirtan, the glorification of the Lord, and then you should distribute sufficient amounts of nourishing prasadam. Yeah? This, when you do this, be rest assured that you will be very dear to me and you will see me for sure again. What Chaitanya Mahaprabhu indicated was that he would give the Brahmana again his darshan. No? Just by these three things. These are things which are commendable in this present age. Read spiritual scriptures, absorb their content, it will give you life. Chant the holy name like you have done since many years, but maybe the seminar which we just has fine-tuned your practice a little bit. And then open the doors of your house to others. Don't be miserly, don't be closed. Open the doors of opportunity by inviting others. So many opportunities arise in the contact with other people. Mm. So this was the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in terms of building the roof. I want to come to an end. Each one of you, I know when people think of America, many think of, oh, I want an American home. Yes, I've heard many times in Europe, people who consider to go to America, they want to have one of these homes. I once checked this. I went to one of the houses. They looked as if they had very nice stone. Mm-hmm. Then I just peeled it a little bit, and I saw it was only a cardboard box. That day I went inside the house, that same American house, please forgive me, but I'm extremely explorative by nature, and I saw all the classics, Dante, Victor Hugo, and so on. And I thought, nice, these are things that we all have read in our childhood, and I picked these classics out, but it was empty. It was a facade only. And I became, I thought, is everything you do here like that? Then I said, no, we have also real things here. I'm sorry. That was my experience. I have to correct this, I have traveled now far and wide, and I've seen many times that it's, we cannot say here is more facade or here are more emphasis on external than in Europe. People are everywhere the same. They make a facade, and behind it is not so much. But it's not a typical, we can't say this is a classical European thing or American thing or so. Not at all. So, yes, people want to build a house, but what is about the best house? What is about the house which gives you what you want? What is the house which connects you with your purpose? What is about your Dharma house? How much have you built there? Fundament. What was fundament? Svadharma. Your unique purpose. Huh? Your one thing. It's a thing which you cannot imagine to not do. Like, for instance, for me as a monk, I always speak about spiritual subjects. Put me on an airplane, then my neighbor will hear a good ear filled of spiritual discussion. I mean, not if he doesn't want, of course, but put me in a waiting room with the doctor, and you will see after half an hour the whole waiting room is discussing spiritual subjects. It oozes out of my pores, this nature to speak about that which utterly inspires me, and that's why I am like this, giving seminars, traveling, giving meditational retreats, etc. It is natural for me. My father wanted me to become a CEO of the German railways. It's a big privately owned company. I think in America the train system is state owned, I do not know, but in Germany it's private, and my father is one of the 24 directors. It's a huge operation. My father wanted me to take over, and I tried. But it was not my Dharma. This is my Dharma. So yes, Dharma means Svadharma, your unique thing, your purpose, that which is belonging to you, as unchangeable as your fingerprint. You know, the fingerprint is not changeable. It's always the same. It is is somehow your fingerprint. So your dharma, what you do in this world, with this body, with this mind, no? Then dharma in relationship to other living entities. The highest dharma is to be, to follow ahimsa, non-violence, or to put it in a positive term, compassion to others. I remember once a young couple came to my spiritual master and they said, what is our dharma now, where we are married in relationship to, like this, Prabhupada said, whenever you have eaten something, no, wrong, cooked something, just go to the door, open the door and say, is there someone who's still hungry? And then when people show up, serve them a meal. The idea is compassion. Do something for the welfare of others. After all, you can't take with you what you take for yourself in this world. But when you give to others, when you follow Dharma, oh, good, good, good benefit is going with you. So that's ethically acting. Main thing of this is ahimsa. And then the third type of dharma, it's called Sanatan Dharma, the eternal dharma. This is the fundament, the walls, and the roof of your dharma house. Could you understand? Does it make sense? In Great Britain we say, does it make sense? No? Yeah. It immediately feels right. Maybe you are still lacking in one aspect, and that is maybe why you are not yet completely satisfied. Maybe you have not yet found your unique contribution, your unique purpose. Or maybe you have found it, but you just do not act properly. You are Mr. or Mrs. Elbow, shoveling your way to the first place of the line. Or maybe you take care of these two types of dharma, dharma in relationship to yourself, that is your own purpose, dharma in relationship to others, acting compassionately. But maybe you have not yet taken care of your spiritual dharma. And maybe you are idealizing normalcy. You know, I'm doing my own thing, my way. Great achievement. I'm a good person, I'm acting good. But you may lack the spiritual dimension and therefore still not feel complete, no? So all the three aspects need to be there for your dharma house. In the end, I want to show you a picture. Ramananda Sakha and myself want to show you a picture. And sometimes we are not so willing to move forward in our life. But sometimes the thing that is holding you back is all in your head. The horse could easily gallop to better places. This is a foolish, small little plastic thing which he can easily dismiss and become free. But he thinks he's bound. Remember our program before of the elephant and the chain, and how Prabhupada said that all of us are chained around the neck by our thinking, by our conditioned nature. So with the help of Ramananda Sakha, I wanted to show you this picture. It was given to me by one of you. I do not see him here, Vrajendra Kumar. Yes, we can. It's a foolish little thing, you know. We can let it disappear again, Ramananda. Sakha. Yes, better. So yes, this Dharma House concept, it is part of the Vedic Way, which we are developing in Europe. It is an experience-based life school, which is taught all over, and you might like to, you will certainly hear more of this. But for now, I leave you with this idea, build your Dharma House. I would like you to find a neighbor, turn to your neighbor. Yes? Very nice to hear that you're so enthusiastic to talk. you must be tired of me. there's something to talk about. I would love to request you to go with your neighbor through these three areas of your life and tell them how good you're doing with your fundament. That is your Swadharma, your own Dharma that you do in relationship to your own life. Then discuss how good you are doing with your Dharma walls, that is acting dharmically, you know, compassionately towards others. And finally, your how good are you doing with your roof? Your Sanatan Dharma, or what you do in relationship to Krishna. We will soon put these three things on the projector, but you can please start already now. We have very short time for this, but please do. It helps you to reflect about what you have just now heard.
Thank you.
If you get lost, there are the three things: fundaments, walls, and roof. Yes, or here, here. Two more minutes. Thank you. I can see some of you go like really explaining with hands and feet about Dharma. It's an important subject. I think you realize it. No, it's this important one. We need to have all this intact. Very important. So I thought we would just do one this question and answers. Yes. What your good name again? Gandavika has reminded us. I promised to do it. Yes, so questions and answers is a very good way to conclude this program. I would like to encourage you to ask any questions regarding this subject, the Dharma House discussion, or if you wish a question pertaining to our Living Name seminar. Mm-hmm. Our Gandavika has the first question.
Mm-hmm. But it's just this The seminar was very useful, Maharaj. But the thing is, I have grown up, but internally I have not really grown up. So I'm sorry if this question is very basic. But the thing is, Maharaj, when I come to ISKCON and then I chant like anything because everybody is after me because I have to get initiated. So I chant no matter what. And then I get my initiation, then after a year or so, and then it's like, it's a chore. But then I see everybody else doing service and everything, and everybody is appreciated. You know, the adoration, distinction, everything is like, if I do best service, then everybody appreciates me, and my happiness comes from appreciation. So I do it very actively. But chanting, if I wake up every day and I chant, as you're saying, at 3 a.m., 2 a.m., it's like, nobody knows that. So I don't get that. I get appreciation from Krishna, but I'm still at lower level. I want my peers to appreciate me. So I feel like, oh no, maybe chanting, it's okay. If I do more service, then everybody's after me and I'm happy, center of attraction, like that. So how do I overcome that type of low tendencies, Maharaj?
Thank you for this very, let me say, that you are bold enough or courageous enough to ask such a question in public. How do I overcome this, that I do things just to get appreciation, and when I and the spiritual things which no one sees, like chanting good rounds in the morning at home, I feel no one sees it, so why do them? How do I overcome this? Well, you must understand life. Life, a successful life in this world, has four dimensions which you must take care of. The first is the spiritual well-being, the second is the physical well-being, you know, health. The third dimension is an emotional well-being, contentment. And the fourth dimension of a successful life is the social well-being. You must have friends, important relationships, and contribute really to the life of others. If you want to understand these four dimensions, with a very, very good image, which will also answer your question. Life is like a tree. Let us call it the tree of life. The tree has roots. It has a trunk with a bark. And it has also a crown with leaves, fruits, branches, etc. These four areas, the four areas of a successful life are also there in the tree. Your spiritual life are your roots, that which nourishes you. Your emotional, your physical well-being and emotional well-being is like the trunk and the bark, no? That's how you stand there in the world, your health. And your emotions, they protect you against negativity, own negativity, negativity from others. And your contributions to the world of others can be compared to the crown of the tree of life. No? So I've seen many people who are very strong in the crown, that is in the social interactions. They do the things which are bringing them the appreciations of others. But I have seen sometimes they are very sick. They don't take care of their physical well-being. And their doctor, 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 you know, is the mantra. I have seen people who are physically very strong. I have seen pictures of men in California. But they have no roots. no spiritual roots. They are really a little foolish, you know. I have seen spiritual people who take very much care of their roots, but they don't do anything for the good of others. They are selfish often. They come home after yoga class and they kick their dogs. Out of my way here, I'm the big yogi here. No, I have seen. So everything needs to be there, in balance. And now I want to tell you a secret. The roots, your spiritual roots, that's not for others to see. It's meant like this. It's for God to see. Therefore, they are in our model, the roots. Do you see the roots of a tree? No, it's under the earth. But if the tree, we may see the trunk and the crown, but if there are not good roots, the tree will fall. The higher the tree grows, the deeper the roots must become. The more you do, in other words, in the world and services that bring you the appreciation of others, if you don't take care of your spiritual roots, you will after some time be dissatisfied. My dear people from Silicon Valley, what does a like on your Facebook account really mean? Is it a commitment? Does it mean something deep? It's just click, get so many Facebook pages today. Yes, this like. Like, what does it mean? In real life, I mean. It means a little ash on the hand, you know, nothing. So, you're laughing because it's very relevant to Silicon Valley, yeah. The whole culture, yes. What does it mean? Will that like person stand by your side when you need them? Will you receive an encouragement at times when you need it? And a genuine, maybe, I will speak in the language of ladies, a genuine compassion when you need forgiveness. No, it is just something in the air or in the computer screen, the memory of the mind of humanity bereft of a conscience. That is, in my understanding, is internet. It shows the mind of the collective human beings without a conscience that tells you this is right, this is wrong. So yes, take care of your roots. Very important. And therefore, today, I think you were there with your notepad and noted everything down. It was about Sambandha. The relationship, no? The one relationship. It's so important. If you don't take care of this, you won't be also satisfied in the devotional line. Really, this appreciation is short-lived and it's not totally satisfying. And there will always be someone who's much better than you and who gets much more appreciation. And you will think, why him? Or why her? Doesn't the world recognize my outstanding qualities? You know, like this, no? It doesn't mean appreciation is not necessary. It's necessary in one space, our social space. But we are not just social animals, we human beings. We have to take care of our physical body with enough healthy, nourishing food and enough dancing in the temple so that there's good spiritual exercise. We have to take care of our emotional well-being when we feel a need of encouragement, when we feel misunderstood, when we feel there's a need that someone listens to me and understands what is going on in me. Me means the person behind the facade, the real person. So the roots are very important. Yes, is that good? That image helps a lot, the tree of life. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have, it's very, yes, we, yes, please. I will try now to be very brief. Oh.
So Maharaj, after the seminar yesterday, whatever we had, I was very inspired, and today I tried to follow by chanting as much, you know, I could. And I noticed that till yesterday, my 16 rounds would take like 1 hour, 50 minutes, 55 minutes. But when I was trying to apply everything, it was taking much longer. And then, so first maybe 8 rounds I was good, but after that I was a little impatient that, you know, it's taking longer, and maybe the last rounds were not as good. So I was, I just wanted to ask your recommendation. Is it better to chant all 16 rounds together, or should we split it, like maybe in a good rounds, like 8 now,
mm-hmm. 8 later? Yeah. It is definitely very good to train our mind to do everything, our sadhana, in the time when the sadhana is best done in the morning before we do other activities. But if that is for some reason not possible, we can split it up. I heard Srila Prabhupada, when he was in his Grihastha ashram, he chanted 4 rounds before breakfast, 4 rounds before noon, noon meals, 4 rounds before the evening dinner, and 4 rounds before nighttime. So he also divided it, because it was practically not possible to do in other ways. I think we have to be practical, but the ideal is, which we should not lose out of mind, to chant in one round. And don't worry, whatever you learn in the beginning, it takes more time. But if it's a good thing, then let it take more time, and then it will, after some time, you will find your speed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I'm seeing the...
Yes.
Hare Krishna.
From yesterday, one of the questions that I had is, you know, we live in an age of instant gratification. You know, we want to look up something, we look on Google, we find it instantly. Mm-hmm. But in terms of our japa or our practice, you know, we find that we're chanting for Krishna Prem, we're chanting to feel a connection to the Lord. And then you sometimes read, like Srila Prabhupada says, it took me 40 years to master my chanting.
Yeah.
And I read it, I'm like, 40 years, wow. It's going to take me 40 lifetimes maybe. So the question is, you know, how I think about that. You know, 40 lifetimes seems like a really long time. How do I develop that discipline or that patience?
Wonderful question. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You could name again, Neela Madhava, no? Neela Madhava, wonderful. It's a good, you have all followed the question?
Yes. That,
oh, it seems to come so long. My answer is to this question, consider the value of what you get, and then as you are moving towards that valuable thing, already your whole life gets increasingly better if you do it conscientiously. I can tell you my experience when I came to the path of Krishna consciousness. I was very interested in music, very interested in music. I was playing violin, and I was a young man from an affluent background, and then I came in contact with the devotees of Krishna, and I first practiced at home while doing all my other things, my music, my schooling, my friends, normal life. And I then noticed, let me step up my practice. And I did it more, and I could see something was changing. First, I was not quite sure what was changing, but then I noticed I am changing. And my interest in the world is no longer so big. I'm no longer so much interested in visiting various concerts and musical events, and I like to dance also very much. I was a really, really accomplished dancer. And I noticed also dancing retained its charm because I could engage it in Krishna service. But what I began to notice on the path is that I developed insights into Krishna's nature. I had experiences with Krishna, wonderful experiences. And although these were by no means any signs of spiritual perfection, it was really beginning stuff. But I noticed my life is so good. And then I thought, if already on the path these experiences of Krishna come, this sense of deep satisfaction comes in my life, then what will happen if I commit myself more? And I did not really think of the, how long it would take, until one day someone asked Prabhupada, how long does it take? And Prabhupada answered, it can happen in 1 second or not after 1 million births. Then he looked to that inquirer and said, it depends on your sincerity. If you take it serious, it can happen, you know, that period of 40 years which you talk about. I have also heard this number. Prabhupada said 40, one time he said even 50 years. It can be shortened. It depends on your sincerity. And when you are sincere on your spiritual path, you will see spiritual realization or enlightenment happening in installments, so to say. Incremental installments, if that is an English word. So that is my answer. Yes, it may be ultimate perfection, maybe 40 or 50 years or even lifetimes away. But what happens on the way is already so great that it's much better than the materialistic life. And the speed in which realization comes is utterly and only dependent on how much you are committing yourself to the path. A wonderful question. Already what comes, Nila Madhava, is much better than what came to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Governor of California, I heard. Hare Krishna. Yes, oh, so many of you are... Vrindavan, please ask your question in the microphone that we can all hear.
So sometimes when I'm almost going to finish my rounds, like when I'm almost going to finish my rounds, I feel kind of excited that I'm going to finish it. And then I don't focus. So the first, 10 rounds, I'll be focusing. But then the next 6 rounds, I'll be really excited that I'm going to finish it. So how do we get over that excitement?
This would be a question for Raseshwari or some homeschooling mother. I think it's all right for you to be excited. You know, you are a young boy, you know. Let the life be full of excitement for whatever reason. isn't it? For whatever reason, if you're excited that soon I'm finished, let it be so. You're a young boy, yes, very good. You must understand one thing, you grown-up people. When we think, when a child comes to a school or any program, spiritual program, we may think the child comes to learn or to have a very serious practice. You know, but the child only wants one thing. He wants to have fun. And when it's boring, he will. So have excitement, have fun with Krishna. Very important. Good. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for such a wonderful journey of taking us through holy names. I have one question. Yesterday we were talking about the mind like a little dog going away. And when we remember, we should bring it back and focus on the holy name. Sometimes what I notice is the modes are so strong. Even when I notice that the mind has gone away, and it is thinking about some to-do list or some service which we have some attachment to, I feel I'm not sincere enough to bring it back also. So what should I do at that time and otherwise also, so at least we can bring it back?
Yeah, if you I understand, we notice our mind is gone and we think a little daydreaming while chanting would actually be quite nice. And, well, then you will lack the willpower, and will is the fundament of anything which you do. So when you see I'm lacking sincerity here, then you need to pray that the sincerity will come one day. I really feel there is no other way. What is the use of forcing something which you don't want? It you know, you will say, it's not my path, you know. So pray to Krishna, and then he will answer, and one day will take away that insincerity which makes you still compromising, which leads you to compromise in your spiritual activities. Say, my Lord, this is all I can offer at this present moment. Please accept whatever I can give, and please give me what I want to give in the future. Like this. We have to be honest with it. Prabhupada says we have to be frank and open with the Lord. Cheating him will not work. He knows our heart. We will pray, oh, this is a typical Indian prayer I've seen. Oh, God, if you want, I will come to your temple. If you want. Yes, here is. I'm very sorry. I saw you. This will unfortunately be the last question because 5 o'clock is coming. I'm very sorry. Yes. The microphone is just now coming.
Hare Krishna. So you mentioned about being ethical. You said that if you're ethical in life, you have to be sure, you should be rest assured that universe is on your side. But you see people around you that are not ethical and they kind of get away with it. So what's your thought on that? Like if you look at the story of Pandavas, they went through, you know, they were always the righteous people, the righteous between Pandavas and the Kauravas. But they went through a lot of suffering, right? So what's your thought on that?
What a wonderful question you have asked. So real to life. I once heard a prayer from Mother Teresa, which I find somehow speaking to me on this question. People are unforgiving. Forgive them anyways. People are, and then she goes through a whole list of people hurt you. Try to help them anyways. And a whole list like this. And then she ends her thing. In the end, it's not between you and them. It's between you and God. It always has been. This is the conviction of a spiritually minded person. Now, of course, when you are taken meanly advantage of, meanly, I mean really a mean person, my spiritual master said there is no sense of being honest to a thief. Do you have anything at your home? The thieves asked you. Nothing. And it's right under your cushion. And so on. Don't be honest with a thief. In other words, there are situations in life when you have to think of self-protection. But generally, this I have seen in the end, Dharma always wins the race. And adharma loses the race. You just have to be persistent enough. And sometimes maybe when you feel you are cracking down, then you need to protect yourself, but not hurt or harm others. That is not necessary. Just something, some protective means. It is very much pleasing for me to see all of your inquisitiveness. Let me just ask, Amit, you are here. Are we ready? Oh, Hansapriya, you are here. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yes. So we will end this part here. Amit, please tell what we need.